I raise my eyebrows and give her an unenthusiastic thumbs up. I hope she's grown out of her love of boy bands. Anna finally finds me, and her smile disappears as our eyes meet. My confidence returns, obliterating all traces of nerves. I'm going to take care of this girl in every possible way. Judging by how she nibbles her lip, she knows it. I lift a hand to call her over. Moments later, she's standing before me, the dress accentuating her waist. "Hey," she says, a bit bashful. "Hey, yourself. You're stunning. I feel like a slob." She looks me over, taking me in. "You always look good." Her shy smile melts me. I ignore Jin's gagging noises from where she's sitting nearby, and I wrap my hands around Anna's hips, leading her toward me. She sits beside me, lifting her hair, fanning herself with a shaking hand. I take that hand and place a soft kiss in her palm. "Don't be nervous," I sign to her with my other hand. Her face still looks pinched with tension, so I pull her onto my lap and she lays her head on my shoulder. "Are you sure about this?" Her whisper is warm against my neck. "I am," I assure her. "Are you?" "Yes." Well, there you have it. Blake ambles out of the cockpit, and I circle a finger in the air as if to say, "Let's go." He nods his agreement. The sooner we're in the air where the whisperers don't venture, the better. We all take our seats, and 15 minutes later, we're lifting off smoothly. I'm rather impressed with Blake's flying skills. Once we've reached our altitude, Blake puts the plane on autopilot and joins us as the girls freak out about it. It's quite humorous, and I can't help chuckling, relieved to have all my closest mates by my side. When we stand, I'm racked with nerves again, and I hope it doesn't show. "I didn't prepare vows or anything," Anna says. "I guess we're just winging it." Vows? Was I supposed to do that? Blake shakes out a piece of paper and my worry subsides. He's printed out traditional vows, and he even got an official license to marry us, per Belial's suggestion. But leave it to Blake not to be serious. He puffs out his chest and declares, "Dearly beloved," like an old southern minister. We all lose it, and shy, I don't realise how blazing tense I am until we're all falling over with laughter. "All right," Blake says when we finally calm down. He looks at me. "For real this time. Keep your eyes on Anna and repeat after me. You ready?" I run my hands through my hair, frustrated by this persistent nervousness. Nothing has ever been this important to me. I've been thinking of this as Anna's special day, but as I exhale sharply and take her hands again, I realize I want this as much as she does. I lock eyes with Anna and prepare to vow my love and loyalty to her alone. My voice drops an octave as I fight back emotion. "I, Kaiden, take you, Anna, to be my wedded wife. To have and to hold from this day forward, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, in sickness and in health." I struggle to get the next words out. "Till death do us part." Anna's eyes drift closed, forcing tears to roll out. I quickly wipe them and whisper, "No tears, love." Her chin quavers, but she nods. We grip hands tighter. Her voice is pure and angelic when she says her vows, and I let each word soak into my skin, through muscle and bone, into my very soul, where I'll cherish them for eternity. She beams up at me when she finishes, and my broad smile matches hers. "Time for the rings," Blake says. Anna's face falls. "Oh, I didn't." "Don't worry," I say, reaching into my pocket. I know she is a reasonable girl. I hope too reasonable to expect diamonds, but I'm still anxious about her reaction. I open my palm to show her. "I figured we'd have to wear these on our opposite hands after today," I explain when she says nothing. "And since it's our secret, I decided on your birthstone instead of a diamond. I had to guess your size." She stares a moment longer before grinning up at me. "I love it." The awe in her voice makes me stand taller. I hand her the men's band and we exchange rings, sliding them onto each other's fingers as a symbol of our love and commitment. Blake claps a hand onto my shoulder. Now for the good part. You may kiss your bride. About time, I say, leaning forward to seal the most important moment of my life.
No tongue,
Jin shouts. Yes, tongue, Mana counters. Oh, for the love of... Anna flings her arms about my neck and snogs me good to shut them up. Mana and Blake cheer and Ginger snorts. I drown them out and focus on Anna's lips. We press our foreheads together and her eyes sparkle with glee. Did we really just do that? I ask. She smiles and nods and bursts into excited giggles. I grab her around the waist and lift her up, kissing her again, fighting the instinct to take her straight into the loo for a bit of privacy. Should I be this turned on by a wedding? I ask.
You get turned on when the wind blows, Ginger says with a laugh.
Right enough. Anna laughs and I grin at her. We're all a bit mad at that moment, as if we'd had loads to drink, though in fact we're sober as nuns. I suppose that's how rebellion feels, living with purpose, like each second is monumental and full. I soak it in, because I'm not fool enough to think it will last forever. But it's ours now. All ours. Chapter 32. Finally. You trace my lines, stirring my soul, shoot sparks at the heart of the world, and I watch it explode. Run, by Matt Nathanson. The extravagant cabin is even better than I'd hoped. Anna certainly seems to agree. She's rushing about the rooms in hyperspeed, sighing and touching and exclaiming about every detail. The bed looks as if it's been carved from an ancient tree, complete with overhanging branches and wood beams in the ceilings. Everything resembles autumn, with fabrics of red, brown and yellow, and rustic wood furniture. I want to kiss Anna every time she flits past, but I can't bloody catch her. Finally, I nab her in the ginormous bathroom and our mouths meet. When she tenses, I pull back. What's wrong? She glances down. I don't know what I'm doing. Ah, she's already thinking ahead. Anna, I ask. Hmm? She's gone shy. Have you ever felt as though you were fumbling around awkwardly when we're together? I guess not. Exactly. Some things come naturally, so don't overthink it. I'm going to take care of you. She talks quietly, not looking me in the eye. But I want to take care of you too. You have to show me what to do. My lovely Anna is too kind. She has no clue how anything she does this night will only further satisfy my growing need for her. I'm not as hard to please as you might imagine. I'll show you anything you want. She swallows and nods. Also, I clear my throat. 2 days ago when Father told me he was sending me to seek you out, I had a test done. Just in case anything were to happen with us. I just wanted to be sure. Damn good thing too, because after Mana, I'd be paranoid as hell tonight. Oh, Anna says, to make sure you're really... sterile, yes. And I am. Thank you, she whispers. And she finally gets brave enough to look up at me. Her eyes widen and I feel a stirring in my belly. For so long I've held back with her. I will still have to hold back a bit because she's not yet ready for it all. But there are things I can and will do tonight, starting with seeing every bit of her skin. I glance over her mouth at the freckle at the corner of her lips. Anna. Hmm? Her voice goes high. She clears her throat. Remember when I told you I wanted to introduce myself to every freckle on your body? She nods slowly. Well, it's time. Her cheeks bloom with colour. I close my eyes as a warm wave of pears and freesia permeates the air. You smell so damn good. Though this moment feels long overdue, I know neither of us was truly ready until this night. This is how it was meant to be for us. I take her hand and lead her back into the main room. I want to put on music, but mine's a bit dark. I dig through the bag from Mana and stare down at the music player she sent. Mana downloaded mood music as a gift, I mutter. I'm a bit frightened. Anna giggles at my apprehension. I set up the dock and turn it on. Sure enough, the first song is twangy. Country music. Since when does Marna listen to this? I love this song, Anna says, and I groan. Of course she does, Georgia girl. And I suppose it's not that terrible. But still, who knows what the rest of this playlist will bring. Maybe we should listen to my playlist instead. I reach for my device. Anna gives her head a shake and takes a bold step toward me. Come on, Kai. My freckles are getting impatient. Bloody hell. Did my little vixen just tell me to hurry up? I forget all about the playlist. I advance toward her, wondering if she has any clue what she sparked in me. My freckles are getting impatient. Well then, I say, let's not keep them waiting. I'm standing in front of her now and her chest is rising and falling rapidly. Take it easy, mate. I've waited too long to rush. I slip my hand under her hair and tilt her face up to mine. Her eyes close and I taste her lips, softly at first, taking her bottom lip between mine and then seeking her tongue with a gentle swipe of my own. As our mouths tangle and play, I walk forward and she walks backward until we're stopped by the bed. I need the dress off now. I begin gathering it between my fingers, working it upward until the hem is in my hand. She lets me raise it over her head, and she's standing before me in her bra and silk underwear. Her eyes are still nervous, but she moves for my shirt, and I raise my arms for her to pull it over my head. I swish the hair from my eyes, then feel her hands on the buckle of my shorts. I take her hands away, saying, "Not yet." It's been so long that I don't want to test my self-control. Right now, I need to see all of her. I slowly reach behind and flick open the clasp of her white strapless bra. As it falls, she covers her chest. There, she bites her lip and looks down. I place my hands over hers. I assure you, they're perfect. I gently pry her hands away and look down at Anna, exposed before me. My breath hitches like I'm a lad. I have to close my eyes and gather my wits before I can look at her again. Every curve, peak, and valley. I can't believe she's mine. All mine. Like I said, I grit out. Just right. On the bed with you now. She obeys, and I know she'll do anything I say right now, because she trusts me. She wants me. It fills me with a masculine pride that makes me want to roar. I lie next to her on the bed and force her to stay on her back while I peruse every inch of her skin. Each time she attempts to touch me or pull me or move closer, I stop her. It's driving her mad, and the delicious power rush makes me want to go even slower. Shoulders, collarbones, breasts. She lets me kiss her and taste her and learn her. Waist, belly button, hips, stomach. Every inch of her is smooth and sweet as the next. She squirms and groans, grabbing sensually at my hair. When I get to her panty line and go lower, down to her thighs, she lifts her hips and I firmly push them back down. Please, she whispers. Not yet. I know what she needs, and I know I can make it even better by building that need within her, just as my own is building. I flip her to her stomach and start at the top of her body again, moving her hair aside so I can kiss her upper back. She gasps and cries out when I get to the base of her spine. I smile to myself, having found one of her zones. And when I get to her arse, the most perfect, round bit of flesh to ever exist, I nearly lose my head and rip the tiny piece of lace from her body. A low rumble emits from my chest. Anna takes advantage, saying, "Take them off." I'm too lost to drag this out a moment longer. I sit up and pull the knickers down her smooth legs. What's left before me is my sexy little Anna's backside, completely naked. "My God," I whisper. "She's more perfect than I imagined. And I imagined this a lot." Anna turns over and I soak in the front image of her. Heaven. She reaches for my shorts, but I grasp her hand and gently bite her naughty finger. I'm not done yet. She falls back with a moan as I make my way straight to her lower stomach again, this time with no barrier of fabric to block me. I kiss down her inner thigh, and Anna's breathing goes ragged. I kiss her again, right where she needs, and my sight shatters into a myriad of white shards. Within seconds, Anna cries out, and I tighten my grip on her hips. She overwhelms my senses. Anna is the scratching of nails in my hair. She's the sound of high moans in my ear, the firm thighs against my unshaven cheeks, the sweet scent that surrounds me. Her cries turn to tired breathing, and her grip on my hair relaxes. Only then do I relent and move up to place kisses on her flushed face and closed eyelids. I love knowing I've done this to her. "You can nap, love," I whisper. She sags further into the bed, murmuring. Then her eyes pop open. She pushes to her elbows and glares as if I'd said something offensive. I have to laugh. Her hair has gone a bit poofy in the back, and she's a right gorgeous sight. "It's your turn," she says. "Oh." I go still, wondering exactly what she has in mind. Inside, my body claps like a damn seal, but outside I'm suddenly too nervous to move. She leans forward and kisses under my ear. "Oh yes, that's nice." She kisses my neck, and I reach for her hip, pulling her closer. My sweet little vixen. She licks my earlobe, and a bolt of arousal forces me on top of her. Anna is naked underneath me. All mine. But she tusks and makes a little uh-uh-uh sound as if I've got it all wrong. She pushes me off her and continues pushing me until I'm on my back and she's beside me on her knees, looking down at my body as I did to hers. She bites her lip. Her hands are shaking as her fingers trail over my chest and down my abs. I want to tell her she doesn't have to do this, but she reaches for my belt, determined. Oh, dear God. I could quite possibly make a terrible fool of myself right now. I grasp her hands and breathe out harshly. Her eyes fill with worry and I have to say something. "Sorry. It's just that it's been a while." "It's okay," she whispers. It's as if she's relieved that I'm showing weakness, though I'm not at all happy about it. Once I've taken several breaths, I release her hands and she continues to undress me. I lift my hips for her and kick off the shorts. "Wow," Anna murmurs. She stares so hard that I'm about to lose it. "Damn it, Ro, be cool," I chide myself as she takes a visual fill of me with an expression of awe and curiosity. I close my eyes and swallow. I try to imagine non-sexy things, but it's difficult when she's hijacked all of my senses. I breathe, trying to regain control, but when Anna finally touches me, I have to wrap my hand over hers again. "Just a sec," I say. She bites her lip, and I hope like hell she's not about to laugh at how my voice cracked. "Kai." Her voice beckons me to look at her. I lift my eyes. "It's just me. This is Anna. This isn't work. She wants something genuine from me, not an act." I release her hand and allow myself to feel her touch, to watch her face as she discovers me for the first time. "Like this," she whispers, sultriness underlying her voice. She goes slow and it's pure torture, though I suppose it's only fair play after what I put her through. I shut my eyes and flex every muscle. "Yes, love, bloody hell, just like that. Heaven." I talk her into taking an outdoor shower, and I promise to keep an eye out for whisperers, but there are a few moments as we wash where hands wander and I get a bit distracted. It'd be safe to assume the wandering hands belong to yours truly, but I'm happy to announce Anna was the culprit. Can't keep the girl's hands off me. Afterward, I wrap her in an oversized towel and take her inside to feed her berries and cheese and crackers. She falls over with laughter when I turn on Marna's music and belt out the chorus of "You Don't Know You're Beautiful." "Oh my gosh," she says through her laughter. "You sound just like them and you know every single freaking word. Bit hard to avoid that song, yeah?" We laugh together and I happen to glance over and see the hilt wrapped in its case by her bag. My smile falls and my pulse spikes. I know Anna is ready, but that stupid fear rises up, clawing at me. I rip my eyes away from the sword and stand to stare out the window at the blackened night. If the Sword of Righteousness rejects Anna, it will be my fault.
Hey, Anna says softly, coaxing my eyes across the room to her. She stands on the opposite side of the bed, still in her towel, as am I. It'll be midnight soon. Our wedding day is almost over.
I want to tell her it's not too late to change her mind, that I'll understand if she wants to remain a virgin. But then she says in a seductive voice,
come here.
And I know her mind is set. I slowly walk to my side of the bed across from her and put my hands on my head. Her hair is damp and her cheeks have pink spots. I feel so blooming lucky for this entire day, the best day of my life. In the next moment, when I blink, Anna opens her towel and drops it to the floor. Her chest rises and falls faster as she watches me. Then she climbs onto the bed and crawls like a prowling cat toward me. My body stiffens in shock. By the time she makes her way to me, rising up onto her knees, I am awake and alert.
Are you scared? She purrs. Been too long, out of practice?
Her head cocks to the side, a bad girl grin on her face. And then her words register. Too scared to shag her? I can't even dignify that with a response. I can't even sputter. And then she gives me a purple nurple, twisting my nipple. Oi! I grab her wrist, the mad little cat. I should spank her ass for that. Suddenly my towel is gone and my body is announcing just how much I've enjoyed her naughty act, complete with the ripping off the towel finale. There's laughter in her eyes. Time for me to take control. I swing an arm behind her legs and a hand behind her waist, and I have her on her back before she can blink. I'm pressed heavily on top of her, and from the satisfied smile on her face, this is exactly what she wants. You win, I say. She doesn't gloat. She simply reaches up and cups my face, running her fingers down my cheek and jawline. I lower my forehead to hers, overcome. This is right, Kai. We love each other. I close my eyes. Is our love enough to blot out my past? It's always there, in my mind, a foul and murky swampland. How can Anna not feel it when she's with me? She seems so certain this is right. And sword or no sword, this will at least keep her safe from father for the time being. I'd do anything for you, I say. Just love me. She strokes my cheek again. There's so much I've never had the nerve to tell her. So much I should have said before now. She watches me intently. I need you to know this is different for me, I manage. I've never felt like this with someone. I take a shaking breath. I don't just love you, Anna. I adore you. She kisses me, her hands traveling over my arms and shoulders until they're at my face again and her eyes are on mine. Don't look away from me, I whisper. Her eyes will tell me if I'm hurting her. She nods and whispers back, okay. If you need to stop, Kai, I'm not fragile. Right. She's strong, I know that. I also know how to make her first time a very pleasant experience. I move my hips and nuzzle myself between her legs. She lets me. I watch her mouth open for a silent gasp of air when I circle my hips against her to make sure she's ready. And because I still feel like I haven't said enough, because I need to prove just how momentous this is for me, I bash down the barriers I've kept up for 8 years, unleashing my aura for Anna to see. I shiver as I bare myself, and I feel Anna holding me tighter. I want her to see my love like I saw hers once upon a time.
Oh, she whispers. It's beautiful.
I shake my head. Only one thing deserves that word. You're beautiful. She wraps her legs around me and I move my hips until I find her. We arch slowly, and Anna gasps. Her hands go around my lower back, holding me tight. I move slowly, so slow. Oh, dear God, it is killing me to go slow. Her eyes shut and I stop. She opens them and nods. I'm okay. I move again, slowly gritting my teeth, watching her eyes. I move a bit more, ignoring my bastardly instincts not to be gentle. Her eyes flutter and her whimper escapes, but she quickly meets my eyes again and says, "Don't stop." I fight for breath. Slow movements. Nah. My hips are flush against hers and we're both breathing heavily. She lets out a breathy sound of joy and I grin at her. My wife. I kiss her. She keeps one hand on my back and the other in my hair as the kiss deepens. My hips begin a slow, circular motion, grinding gently against her. Anna breaks the kiss to catch her breath and let out a moaning, "Oh my gosh, Kai." Everything we've gone through has led to this moment. For the first time in my life, I make love, and my heart is full. And though I've been a man by society standards for a while now, this is the first time I've felt like one. I'm Anna's man, her lover, her husband, her ally and friend. Always. Chapter 33. Celebration Above. The heart is a bloom, shoots up through the stony ground. What you don't know, you can feel it somehow. Beautiful Day by U2. I'm immediately ready to go again when I wake in the middle of the night. I can't remember the last time I slept so well. I reach for Anna in the darkness and bolt upright in the bed. She's not there. Anna? It's too quiet in the cabin. I leap from the bed and sprint to the bathroom, but she's not in there either. Anna! I wrench open the door to the outdoor shower, empty as well. I rush to the front door and realize I'm completely naked. Fuck! I run back to the bedroom and flail through the clothing on the floor until I find a pair of shorts. My heart is banging in my throat. Did they take her while I slept? I barrel through the front door barefooted and stare wildly around the darkened area. Forests, road, no lights anywhere. I force myself to concentrate on my hearing, sending it out in a circle around me, slowly letting it extend outward, trying not to miss a single sound. Anna! I call. I'm fighting to breathe. Anna! How could she disappear from under my nose? How could I let this happen? I stop and stare toward the path that leads to the canyon. Yes, footsteps, maybe half a mile. The steps stop and it gets quiet. I take off running. Jagged rocks and branches cut into my feet, but I can hardly feel their sting. My extended night vision is on high to make use of the tiny bit of moonlight. I still cannot sense anything up ahead. A minute later, I think I hear a feminine giggle. Anna? Anna! I race ahead, faster now. 2 seconds later, I hear her call to me. Kai! It's all right, I'm at the canyon. Christ almighty. I'm about to have a heart attack. I've never run so fast. She sounds okay, but I have to see her for myself. I burst through the trees onto a sudden open space and halt at the sight of a massive spirit, bright white. I nearly fall back, but Anna rushes to me. It's okay, she says, wrapping her arms around my heaving chest. I hold her, never taking my eyes off the exquisite spirit. It's not Belial. It's not a demon at all. Nor is it a warrior angel. As Anna tugs me forward, I feel stranger and stranger the closer I get to it. This spirit doesn't fill me with a sense of threat like the warrior angels from the summit. In fact, it's as if this spirit has purified all the dark feelings from my soul, and I'm left only with love and happiness within. The spirit watches me closely as Anna brings me to stand before it, and I'm astonished by the overpowering sense of peace that blankets me. Anna squeezes my hand and stops short at the cliff's edge, never letting me go. She looks up at me. Cadden, this is my mother, Maryantha. My face snaps back to the angel who levitates over the empty space with a contented smile. I have no words. Just, wow. Anna's mother. I lower my head and say, it's an honor to meet you. It is I who am honored to meet the soul who loves my daughter more than any other. I'm too full. Her words, the emotion she's emitting, it all makes me want to inexplicably weep. I keep my head down and swallow. You have embraced life and the truth, Kaiden Roe, and are now reaping the blessing. Yes. I raise my eyes to her and nod, then swallow again, overly grateful. I'm feeling like a boy next door, all wholesome and shit, stuff. I drop my eyes again. I must go, Mariantha says. Guard your love, for it will lead you through the darkness. I nod again and stand there stunned beyond belief as she and Anna say their goodbyes. Then her mother's spirit stretches its wide wings and flies away. I search all around us, but nothing else is in sight. I take Anna's hand and we race back down the path, eager to get out of the open. But I don't feel any fear. The exalted feeling still swirls around inside me, making me want to laugh with unfathomable joy. Anna feels it too, because a smile is on her lips as we run. What did she say to you? I ask Anna when the cabin is in sight.
That they're celebrating our marriage in heaven, she laughs.
And I shake my head at this astounding turn of events. We burst through the cabin doors and I shut the door, locking it. Then I take Anna's face in both my hands and walk her over to the wall where I can hold her in place. I'm finally coming down from the adrenaline rush of fear. You scared me to death, I tell her. Don't ever leave me like that again. I'm so sorry. You were sound asleep and I saw her. I know it was dumb, but she was like... I think of her mother's bright, welcoming form. A beacon? Yes. She takes my wrists, rubbing them to soothe me. Were they really celebrating us? Up there? Her smile is luminous. They really were. Unbelievable. I try to imagine it, that the souls in heaven know us, not just Anna, but me as well. And they're cheering for us. I want to ask why they would celebrate us, but never give us the chance to be there with them, to join them in heaven when we leave this place. Anna breaks my desolate train of thought by crushing her lips to mine, and I react on instinct, pressing her back against the wall and dropping my hands to her body. I remember how I felt when I awoke, before I knew she was gone, and that need returns with a vengeance. Let's not sleep tonight, Anna says. Oh, woman, you're speaking my language. I'm going to let you make all the rules in this marriage, Anna. Good boy. I laugh and grasp her around the waist. She looks down and gasps.
You're bleeding.
I glance at the scrapes and cuts along my feet, ankles and legs from where I ran in the darkness. Most of the blood is already dry. I'm fine. Nearly healed already. But she frowns and I know she wants to nurse me. I kiss her pouting lips and tighten my hands around her waist. When I lift her, she wraps her legs around me and I carry her to an oversized chair. I fall back onto it and give her bum a good slap, making her scream, Hey! I hush her complaint with another kiss and pull her hips down against mine until she lets her head fall back and sinks into my lap perfectly. It's still our wedding night. She's all mine until the sun rises and it's time to release her back into the world. Until then, let the celebration continue. Chapter 34. Unexpected. Miles away, I can still feel you. Lay your head down on my embrace. When You Can't Sleep at Night by Of Mice and Men. When I get off the plane in LA, there are two messages waiting for me from a hospital in Atlanta. I nearly lose my mind until I hear the words Richard Rowe. I hail a cab as I ring the number and get transferred to the doctor on duty. Cardin Rowe? Asks the man solemnly. Yes, that's me. I climb into the cab and show the driver my address on my ID so he knows where to go. I'm terribly sorry to have to tell you this, son, but your father had a heart attack at home early this morning or possibly during the night. One of his employees found him and called 911, but it was too late at that point. I'm very sorry. Your father is gone.
What? Was this planned?
I'm gripping the phone and staring blankly at the city as it passes by the windows.
I need to say something.
But he was so... healthy.
Lame. My shock is real, but it's hard to fake grief.
Yes, he did appear to be quite healthy. I know this must be difficult. We're doing a full autopsy to see for certain what the cause of death was.
I can tell them the cause. A demon leaving a body equals death of said body. My eyes dart around the skies. I've no clue what Father looks like in spirit form, or where his next duty station will be, if this is his changing of the guard. Nice of him to clue me in that this madness would be happening. The doctor clears his throat. Do you have any family or anyone you can call for help? There's quite a bit you'll need to look into right away, son. It can be overwhelming. I'd recommend contacting his lawyer first to see if he has a will with instructions and an insurance policy.
Oh, yes.
I sniff loudly. I'll do that. Thank you. Thank you for your help. I hang up and glare out the window. Bloody hell. This is just what I need. I've no idea who Father's lawyer is or where to begin. I let my head fall back onto the seat as we weave in and out of traffic on the highway, slamming on the brakes and racing forward again, then coming to another dead stop. Damned LA traffic. My apartment feels like an abandoned place where I don't belong. It's depressing without Anna. For the second day in a row, I open the freezer and stare at the meals she made for me. I don't want to eat them, because then they'll be gone and I won't be able to gaze at them like a bloody sap anymore. I can imagine her indignant face if she finds out I'm not eating the food she prepared, her little fists on her hips, scolding me with that accent. Most likely naked. I grin at the imaginary Anna. Okay, I'll eat them. Eventually. One a week, perhaps. We'll see. I pace the kitchen and living room. I have practice tonight with the band, so that'll be good. I need distractions to keep me busy. Hopefully Anna Malone won't be there. I want the drama over with. I told everyone at work that my father died and I'd have to fly to Georgia for a few days. Thankfully, that put them off from questioning my love life for the moment. The lawyer rang me yesterday, saying he'd been instructed to contact me if anything ever happened to Father. His Atlanta estate is to be sold, Father's body is to be cremated, and the insurance policy will cash out. As Richard Rowe's only known family member and heir, I will be receiving the entire sizable payout. The lawyer used the word sizable several times. Thing is, I won't get to keep all that. Father will need the fortune to live his next life in style. I'll get my cut, and then I'm on my own, financially. But I'll always answer to him. I wish I knew where he was. The only good thing is that it takes quite a while to find a new body. At least that's what I've heard. The Dukes are right picky. Father won't be able to sniff Anna out if he doesn't have a nose, so I don't have to worry about him going after her just yet. Belial told Anna to go on to college like she planned and pretend to work. He thinks staying on the run will look too suspicious for her. Now that she's not a virgin, Belial is hoping the Dukes will second-guess themselves. I worry about Belial's assumptions, but he's known the other Dukes a bloody long time. I hope he knows their behaviours well enough not to put Anna's neck on the line. I shut the freezer door and order out for Ty. I hate standing around waiting and worrying like a useless git. In 2 days, I'll fly to Georgia to sign estate paperwork and retrieve Father's remains, which are going straight down a toilet at the dodgiest petrol station I can find. But at least I'll be in the East, on the go. I slump onto my leather couch and grab a pad of paper and a pen ready to scratch out some lyrics. And then my mobile dings with a text. It's a picture from Anna. That's strange. I open it and stare. And stare some more. Fucking hell, little Anne. I ogle a picture of her tangled in a sheet, a knee up, her hip, thigh and arse showing beautifully against a scrap of black fabric that hardly qualifies as knickers. A low, long groan erupts from my throat. She's too sexy. It hurts to look at it, but I can't stop. She's too bloody far away. Why? My hands shake as I type. Oh, God. I stare, I type. What are you doing to me? I'm gobsmacked. I can't believe you took a pic. I stare, I cram my hand into my hair and pull. Cannot stop staring. Too much sexy, I can't even. Just wait, little vixen. I fall over on the couch. F me. You are so effing hot. I think I might die here, a lump of lust. You're in serious trouble when I see you again. I stare. Serious. Trouble. I curl into a ball of pain and die. A moment later, my mobile chirps in my dead hand. I open it with trepidation. Thankfully, it's only words and not more skin I'm not able to touch. Baby steps for your nerdy girl, she writes. The girl clearly underestimates the power of her bum and a seductively minimal pose. Nerdy my arse, I type back. All the cold showers in the world can't cure what you've done to me. Cruel wife. Sorry, she says, but I can see her smiling in my mind. You are not. Leave me alone. I'll be busy for a bit. Cold showers. Not again. I want to cry. But then a horrible thought occurs. I hope she doesn't think I'm truly angry. I quickly type out another message. P.S. I.L.U. I.L.U. too, she says. I catch myself smiling and shake my head. Sap. Then, as much as I hate to do it, I delete each message one by one. When I get to the photo, I take one last long stare, groan deeply, and delete it. Then I trudge heavily to the loo, all by my lonesome, where I might die again. Sexting is dangerous business. I don't recommend it. Chapter 35. One-Track Mind. The only heaven I'll be sent to is when I'm alone with you. Take Me to Church by Hozier. I'm at a bar with my bandmates at midnight, nursing a Jack and Coke and dodging pitiful looks from the blokes who think I'm broken up over father's death. Honestly, I've been a bit of a disaster ever since the picture text from Anna. It sparked a single-mindedness in me worse than ever before, and I cannot cope. No amount of dead daddy talk will make this raging problem of mine go away. I keep thinking about our wedding night. We had less than 12 hours together, and yet it's given me 3 days' worth of non-stop memories. Feels as if I'm living in a fog of Anna. Shite, I think I'm obsessed with my wife. I want to hide her away and keep her all to myself, always. That's psychotic thinking even by my low standards. Oi, that damn picture. My mobile buzzes in my pocket, sending my heart into race mode, as it always does these days. I dig it out and hold my breath when I see it's a text from Anna. Book a flight to VA tomorrow. Right. I don't think Anna would send me a command like that jokingly, not these days. Belial must have contacted her and said it's safe. So I grin, because if all is well with her, she will pay dearly in equal measure for the suffering she's inflicted with her sexiness. With pleasure, I type. You okay? It's been insane here. Here too, she says. Lots to tell. I wonder what she's been up to. Hopefully no visits from unwanted Neff. My neck goes hot with irritation thinking about other Neff hunting her down. She texts me with an address in Rhina, Virginia, and I book my flight for the following morning. All joking aside, I hope she's all right. And I hope she's naked. The fog of Anna finally lifts when I open my eyes to find her on top of me in the passenger seat of a car in Virginia. I feel as if I've been hit with a sledgehammer of clarity as I realize what a single-minded dolt I'd been since I showed up this afternoon and found her lying at the poolside in a bikini. Bum side up. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I spent a good part of the day making everyone uncomfortable as I stalked Anna, trailing her through Patty's house. And it's just my luck, the whole lot would be here to witness my temporary madness. Cope, Xania, Jay, the twins, Blake, and worst of all, Patty. They all know we're married, but that doesn't make it any less inappropriate. I'm just glad my head is semi-clear when her father shows that afternoon. In the body of the famous rapper who'd been hospitalized days ago, no less. Big Rotty. As far as Duke blunders go, this one is fucking brilliant. If I weren't still so afraid of the bastard, I would have laughed my arse off. Then, before he leaves, he puts his hands on my shoulders and says, "You take care of my girl, you hear me?" It's still strange to hear him say things like this, to have his approval. And now here we are at 2 a.m, snuggling in the twin bed of Anna's dorm room as if this day hasn't been one strange event after the next. Despite the madness of our lives, anyone who saw us on campus tonight probably thought we were your average college couple. Funny thing, appearances. Anna's news was unsettling. I can't handle thinking about how my father was here, in this room, just a short while ago. In his new young American body, no less. Apparently the new Farzaf is an even grander piece of work than the old one. Anna says he wreaked havoc on campus after cornering her. I can't believe he found a new host body so quickly, never bothering to inform me. But I can believe he didn't waste any time sniffing out Anna. I'm immensely relieved we decided to get married when we did. Anna snaps me from my dark musings as she runs a hand teasingly up and down my forearm, which is flung across her waist. She's acting as the small spoon, nuzzled tightly in the crook of my torso and thighs. "I want you to dream big with me," she whispers. Dreams? This is dangerous territory for me. I know I'm lucky to have this moment and all the moments that led up to this one. To wish for a future? It feels like tempting fate. Nothing except this very second is guaranteed. But for Anna, dreams fuel her, give her hope. So I'll let her have her fun. "Tell me your dreams for us, sweet Anna." She snuggles closer to my chest. "It starts with us defeating the Dukes. We survive and they're gone." I peer around the dark room as she talks. "We can do whatever we want with our lives. I know you love music, so I figure you'll still work in the industry in some way. And when I finish college, I want to be a social worker. I'll be able to gauge the danger kids are in better than a human would, since I can see their emotions. I'll be able to rescue children from bad situations." I immediately think of Marissa's nieces, and how Anna would have probably tried to save them by now, with no fear of her own well-being. "I can picture that," I whisper. I move the hair off Anna's shoulder and kiss her warm skin. If only more people had Anna's bravery. If only I had it. "We could live wherever you wanted," she goes on. "Patty would probably follow us. After a few years of working, we could think about adopting. I know Patty would just die to babysit while we work." Wow, kids? "Yeah," she says dreamily. "Like 5 or 6.
5 or 6? You're a nutter."
I have to laugh at the thought of little Kaidens in training.
"One boy, maybe 2 boys, but even that's pushing it."
Shite, she's got me entertaining this ridiculous notion.
"We have to have girls too."
Her voice is filled with happiness, but again the thought of Marissa's nieces flashes through my mind and all the girls I've hurt. All the daughters and sisters and future mums I helped lead down paths they may or may not have been able to find their way back from. "No girls," I say. She turns to look at me and the small space is suddenly stifling. I sit up.
"What's wrong?"
Anna asks. I rub my eyes to clear their faces from my vision. I can't even...
"Just the thought of having to care for a girl, watching all the bloody gits sniff around her with their red auras. It would kill me, and I would deserve it because I was the worst offender of all."
"Kai," she touches my arm and I feel like shit.
"No, I can't play along anymore. I'm sorry, love, but kids are not my dream, especially girls."
"Okay." Her voice is soft and gentle. "Let's try to get a little sleep." "I'm sorry," I say, hating that I've ruined the moment. But Anna only lies back down and leads me to do the same. She pulls my arm around her waist, nudging me to spoon her from behind again, and I press my nose into her hair. Why must I always be such a prick? It was harmless make-believe. I should have just let her have her fun and kept my mouth shut.
"Are you angry with me?"
I whisper. She rolls over to face me, touching my cheek.
"No, Kai."
She tries to reassure me and kisses me before rolling back over. I pull her closer to my chest and listen to her breathing change as the minutes tick by, until it becomes slow and even. I can't afford to dream like Anna does. This moment, and every moment I get to have with her, is my dream come true.
"You're my dream," I whisper to my sleeping angel. "My only dream."
Chapter 36. Heartwarming. Exit light. Enter Night. Enter Sandman by Metallica. The following morning, we return to Patty's new home and say goodbye to all our Neff mates. It feels strange when they leave, and I realise that yesterday was the first time we've all been together and just let ourselves be semi-normal. We sat around a table and had a proper meal, like a real family. Marna and Ginger even had a row, of course, because what would a family holiday be without drama? It was actually quite nice, aside from the fighting bit. I'm not ready to leave, but it's nearly time. The Dukes will all be returning to their stations now that their Switzerland gathering is over. I've got to take care of this estate business in Georgia and head back to LA. I'm a bit peeved Father still hasn't bothered to contact me, but I suppose he's never been the most considerate soul. Anna shows me to the upstairs shower and I resist the strong urge to pull her in with me. Not sure Patty would appreciate that. So I reluctantly let her go and climb under the warm stream alone. I'm halfway through washing my hair when I get a prickly sensation on my neck. I stand very still as bubbles rinse down my face and neck, and I push my hearing down the hall, down the stairs, down to the family room where I believe Patty, Jay and Anna are likely sitting. What I find is commotion, bangs and grunts, a moan. What the hell? I spin and shut off the water, then rip the curtains so hard the damn rod comes off the wall and I'm tangled in loads of plastic and ruffles. I finally get the curtain off and jump from the tub. Nobody is saying anything, but it sounds like a definite fight down there. I bypass my boxers and grab my shorts, yanking them onto my soaking wet legs and diving for the door, slipping a bit on the tiles. "Don't come down!" Anna yells, but to hell with that. I run down the hall and fly down the steps, bursting into the family room just as Anna is racing out the back door. A quick survey of the room shows Jay standing there shell-shocked and Patty on the floor, ashen but alive. I run to the door and see Anna staring around the garden and trees, hilt in her hand. Nothing else is in sight. Patty moans and I rush to her side where she's leaning against the couch. "Oh my God, dude," Jay is saying to himself. "Oh my God." "Are you all right?" I ask Patty. She nods weakly.
I think so.
I look her over but see no signs of injury. Anna comes back in and slides to Patty's side, gathering her into her arms. "Are you okay?"
"I don't know what happened," Patty says.
Her eyes are clearer now.
"I felt so sick and scared and..."
She trembles. "Who was here?" I ask, trying not to sound as freaked as I am.
"It was so weird," Jay says. "You should have seen Anna. What is that thing?" He points to the hilt. "It was all lit up. She moved so fast. I've never seen anyone move like that."
She actually used the hilt. I stare at Anna, who's pale, her lips in a stern line. Stray hairs are plastered to her sweating forehead. I take her face in my hands. "What happened?" "3 whisperers were on Jay, 2 on Patty. One was trying to possess her." Patty covers her mouth and gags. I can't bloody blame her. "I killed 4 of them, but one got away."
"One got away?" I whisper.
Anna and I stare at each other as it sinks in.
"One got away. One who saw her with the sword. One is all it takes."
It feels as if my innards are on a carnival ride because this is it. This is the catalyst, the beginning of the end. Anna has started it, and she'll lead us into it. And, oh God. I stand grasping my hair roughly. I feel the same nervous energy course through me as when I had to watch Anna work on New Year's Eve and when she entered the summit in New York the next day. That same bloody powerless feeling. I lean against the wall, my head spinning. Shite, Anna. I'm not ready for this. It's too soon. I'm not ready. A yell forces its way upward and out of my mouth and I punch the wall with all my strength. My fist goes through drywall. I have to protect her. I can't let anyone hurt her. I know she's strong, and though we don't look at things the same way or think things through the same, she is smarter than me in many ways. I know all of that, but I'm still crazed with the need to hide her from the world. I turn and lean against the wall, pressing the heels of my hands into my eyes. I'm not ready.
"Kai,"
Anna's voice is clear and calm. I drop my hands. She has brushed the stray hairs from her face. I don't know how she can look so certain at this moment.
"I don't think they know you're here," she says to me.
That's to our advantage. I nod, though it's hard to believe anyone's got the advantage here but the Duke's. You're not on the suspicion list, she goes on. So you can stay in the know. We'll go our separate ways and... No, I interject to stop her. She's mad if she thinks I'm letting her out of my sight. I stay with you. If she refuses, I will follow her. I stare at her, daring her to argue. She sighs and looks aside, thinking. Okay, let's get our stuff and get out of here. Bloody right. Together. We say our goodbyes to Jay and Patty. Anna hugs her mum tight and then we run. I drive Anna's car and she lies low in the back seat. When an unknown number shows up on my mobile, I know it's father straight away. I've been curious to hear from him before, but now? Not so much. Hello? I answer. It's Farzoff! I knew he was young and American now, but hearing his new voice is still fucking weird. Yes, sir? Are you in Atlanta? Not yet. I glance at Anna, who's bloody adorable in a baseball cap, and for half a second I'm distracted. And then young twatty Farzoff speaks again. Meet me at our former home tonight at 9 p.m. I'm flying in and we have some things to discuss. All I can think of is that I have Anna with me and how fantastically horrible his timing is. I'll see you at 9 o'clock, sir, I say, like a good boy. Don't be late. He hangs up and my jaw locks with annoyance at his insolence. It's a good thing we've got a 7-hour drive ahead of us, because it's going to take at least that long to mentally prepare for this. I won't just be swallowing my pride, I'll be choking on it. At 8:30, I'm back in my old room and I feel no warm and fuzzy memories. In fact, I'm entirely creeped out to be back here, surrounded by ghosts of my past. I focus on the fact that Anna is parked up the street and I've got knives in my pockets and boots. The blades have even been dipped in holy water. If demon legend is correct, holy water does more than repel demons. It's like a poison to them, like prayer in liquid form. I push my hearing down to where I know Anna's parked, but I hear nothing. She is silent and unmoving. Good girl. Now I just hope she stays there. I hope she has no reason to come charging at the house, sword blazing. Although that would be a brilliant sight. I pace the room. Perhaps I should go upstairs to wait, but this room feels like my territory. I'd prefer to meet here if you'll allow it. I flick on my old stereo system and smile as the high volume vibrates the floor under my feet. Screaming lyrics. The whine of electric guitar chords. An unrelenting drum beat. Lovely. A strand of my hearing remains on the front door, so I know when Father comes in. I'm on my third Nine Inch Nails song. My hands clench and stretch open. Clench and stretch. I stare at the door. When it swings wide, a tall, blonde bloke stands there with his face scrunched in disgust. We are matched in body thickness, but he might have an inch of height on me. He carries himself like a wanker. Three grungy spirits fly next to him and over him, filling the room with half their wingspans spilling through the walls. I hope they don't venture around the premises during this visit. Shut this racket off! He yells. Yep, wanker. I flip the stereo off and he lets out an annoyed sigh. Good to see you, Father. I nearly trip over the word father. He's got the large red badge, but he can't be older than 20 or 21. Excellent choice on your new host body. Yes, it was, he says, running a hand through his thin, silky-looking hair. He'll probably be balding by 30. You sign the estate paperwork tomorrow? Is that what this is about? Yes, sir, in the morning. He pulls a folded paper from his back pocket. Here's my new account information. You'll receive your own funds from the life insurance and inheritance. Everything else needs to be transferred to me. If a penny is missing, I will know it. I understand. Git. He just wants to make sure he gets his money so he can start his new life ASAP. Could have just rung me, but I suppose he wanted to show off his pretty new body. The spirits circle us, restless. Father ignores them. Good. He sniffs the air and glances at the king-size bed with its black and grey silk bedding. I'm going to sell all of it. I don't want anything that's been in this house. Smells like old lust in here. You were always a good worker. I blink. Wow, a compliment. Thank you, Father, Then I remember Anna is listening. I hope he won't go into any details.
Things aren't always what they appear, are they?
He asks. The whispers hiss in anticipation as his voice takes on a silky edge. I feel my eyes narrow. What's he going on about? Is he talking about my working? Shite, has he had someone watching me in LA that I don't know about? I force myself to ask nonchalantly.
In what way? Something's not right.
He slowly walks the room, running a finger over my black dresser, which has gathered a light layer of dust since nobody's been here. He wipes the finger on his jeans and holds his hands behind his back, much like he used to in his old body, but it looks strange, his muscles are bulkier.
I haven't been able to put my finger on it.
As he talks, he looks at my framed posters of favourite bands, all autographed. He's acting as if what he's saying is no big deal, but it feels as if he's about to drop a bomb. Dread trickles down my spine.
Ever since that summit, when the damned angels showed up, we've been watching the daughter of Belial.
Do not react. Lie through your teeth. I snort a derisive laugh.
Her? No offence, father, but I don't see why an unremarkable neph like the daughter of Belial would warrant such attention. I've worked with her. She's excellent at her job, but on a personal level, she's rather boring.
He turns to face me now, amused.
So you took no pleasure from your time with her?
Tricky bastard. Always with the games. His new grin is too wide. The whisperers turn their ugly, hazy heads to hear my response.
Oh, I took my pleasure. I also got out of there as quickly as I could. She's got zero personality unless she's wasted.
The whisperers hiss and make raspy, choking sounds of laughter. Father chuckles low.
I know being with her was a chore, but it was necessary. She's somehow been able to fly under the radar. Now we know for sure that she's a threat.
A threat? I laugh as if it's a ridiculous notion. He takes three quick steps towards me and points in my face, hair slanting across his forehead as he tilts his head almost comically. The spirits bob up and down in agitation.
You think this is funny? You think I have time to joke around?
I keep a straight face and force a respectful tone.
Of course not. But having spent a good bit of time with her, it seems preposterous. She cares about nothing except where she'll find her next drink.
His eyes narrow and his voice lowers.
Then she's fooled you as well. That boring neff, who you think so benign, was caught being affectionate with her human mother figure this morning.
He spits the words.
We sent 5 legionnaires to get more information, and the girl took out 4 of the spirits. She's a mercenary of heaven.
He snarls the last sentence with venom, and his whisperers move about the room, faster, upset, making scratchy noises like dry, noiseless screams. I school my face into concerned shock.
What? How is that possible?
He stands straighter and runs a hand through his hair again, as if trying to decide if he'll trust me with the next bit. Thankfully he does, but his eyes flash red as he talks.
She's somehow able to wield a sword of righteousness. Only angels of light have been able to do that.
I force my eyes wide and shake my head.
But why would an angelic weapon allow her to use it? I've watched her lead souls astray and I nailed her myself. She's hardly angel material.
Those words feel especially acidic on my lips.
Aye.
He shakes his head, looking almost frightened.
We don't know.
We have stumped the Dukes for what it's worth. Now to attempt to lead them astray.
Is it possible someone is trying to deceive all of you? Point you in the wrong direction? I mean, how do you know about the sword and the spirit she supposedly killed?
He ponders this, still appearing baffled.
One of them escaped.
I hope that spirit isn't misleading you, I say. The trio of whisperers advance on me with claws and teeth bared. I wave a hand to ward them off.
They're too stupid to come up with something like that.
The whisperers reel back and glare at Father as if deciding whether or not to be offended. He gives a flick of his wrist and points to the door. They swoosh out, and Father goes on.
Unless they're being led by someone. But I haven't seen a spirit that terrified since the fall. We send it down to Lord Lucifer for further questioning. He'll get the truth out of it.
I can't respond because my muscles are tensed against the shudder that Satan's name elicits.
We've got legionnaires on the hunt for both her and her father.
Belial's been eluding us for a while now, so he's definitely up to something.
I nod. I see you're keeping several whisperers with you to keep an eye out. That's good.
He puffs his chest out and humphs.
I'm not going to let that girl get in a sneak attack. The other dukes and I are staying armed and ready. We'll find her and hold an emergency summit to learn the truth and get rid of her once and for all. Angels be damned.
And that is when the truth will be made known. Please let this work.
What can I do to help? I ask.
Search for her. If you find her, she becomes your prisoner and you'll notify me immediately. Do whatever is necessary to keep her with you and get her to the location we choose for the summit. And most important, disarm her. Under no circumstances should she be allowed access to the Sword of Righteousness.
Of course, I'll begin immediately. I have a few ideas where she might be.
Good.
He steps closer and looks me dead in the eye.
It's in your best interest not to fail me in this endeavor. Do you understand?
Another death threat. How original. Thing is, I'm no longer scared for myself. My only concern is Anna. For her sake, I won't punch old Farzuff in his new face. Yet.
I understand, I answer.
His eyes are bright. He's probably feeling the glorious weight of his power trip.
I'm going to Marissa's tonight, and I leave in the morning. My new duty station will be in New York City, so it's time for me to get settled there. Don't waste any time getting to work on your task.
Yes, sir, I say absently, still stuck on one tiny detail. But you're going to Marissa's, you say? Doesn't she think he's dead?
He chuckles and flashes that obnoxiously wide grin again.
Marissa is a special human. She knows about our kind. She's expecting me and can't wait to get her claws into my new skin.
His grin is still huge and I force a nod.
Yep, she's special, all right. An especially evil bitch.
She must be an exceptional woman if you've been able to trust her in such a way.
Father pulls out his mobile and glances at it, then pockets it again.
Exceptional, yes. And I still expect you to be at her service if she calls on you, regardless of whether or not we live here.
Like hell I will.
Of course, Father.
Enjoy your evening. I'll begin my search for the Neph straight away.
If you need to involve the son of Melkom to help you, then do that. He has a lot of resources at his disposal on the West Coast.
Brilliant idea, I say.
He turns from me, pulling out his mobile again as he walks out. I stand there alone and listen to him ascending the stairs to the upper floor.
Another heartwarming conversation with Father has ended.
Chapter 37. Ready or not. If love's a fight, then I shall die, with my heart on a trigger. Angel with a Shotgun, by The Cab. The full weight of our situation doesn't hit me until I'm with Anna again that night. I stare at her brown eyes in the back seat of her car at Lookout Point, where we went after my meeting with Father. Trepidation is heavy on me.
Anna is strong, yes, but she is flesh and bone. She has a tender, sensitive heart, and our grand plan is to set her in front of all the dukes and legionnaires in order to play out this prophecy? Can anyone else see what a bad idea this is? I have a hard time believing this is how it must go down. There has to be another way. She is one being with one sword. There are 666 of them. Granted, we have a handful of Neph allies, but the odds are stacked against us. Perhaps Anna and her father and the others are okay with handing her over to the Dukes to be slaughtered, but I'm bloody well not. I have to make her see straight. We don't have to do this. You can stay hidden like Xenia. I could take Anna to the very same convent. I can't hide forever. And what would that mean for you? Your father will expect you to be working. Marissa will be calling you. No, none of that matters. I'll go into hiding with you. That's no way to live. Isn't it?
we'd be together. Her shoulders are set as she examines my face. I know she can't understand my selfishness, but damn it, I can't understand her selflessness either. Are you truly not afraid? I ask. At all?
Of course I am. But the chain of events has started and we can't start the prophecy now.
We can try.
We can slow it down. We don't have to rush straight into the burning fire. Why is she in such a rush to do this?
I know the Dukes are evil and the Whisperers are a bloody nuisance, but this prophecy could kill her. Could kill all of us. I can't be left on this earth without her. And I can't stand the thought of Anna suffering.
She shakes her head and her eyes droop as if she feels sorry for me.
I finally have you, Anna.
I sound so pathetic. She touches my hand. And every second we've had together is a blessing I never thought we'd get. She takes my shoulder, but I'm so tense I can hardly feel her hands on me.
Anna's hands move up my body and curve around the back of my neck. She holds me hard and kisses me. This I feel.
I kiss her back like her mouth offers sustenance. I pull her close and revel in the feel of her hand scratching through my hair.
God, Anna,
I say against her mouth. I hold her so hard, hard enough to keep her here forever. Hard enough that nobody can take her from me. I tear my mouth from hers and pant for air. I can't lose you. Her hands pull at me and her voice is ragged with emotion.
Stop thinking that way. I can't fight them if you're not on board, Kai.
I look at her and I fucking hate myself. Anna wants to save the world, not for her own glory, but because she cares about the people who were terrorized by the demons. She cares about the Neff and our way of life. She cares about all the things that I don't. I can't give her what she needs from me right now, my support, and I hate myself for it. I try to pull away, disgusted with myself, but she takes my face in her firm grasp and puts us nose to nose.
You haven't lost me, Kai. I'm right here with you. Hold me.
I pull her to my lap and bury my face in her neck. She's right here, in my arms. She knows I'm a selfish prick, but she's still here. I breathe and swallow and hold on tight. I hold her as the stars light the night sky and the crickets send up their cacophony of mating calls. I hold her as the hours pass and our bodies wind down and weariness catches up with us. All the while I keep an eye out for whisperers and I scan with my hearing. It's eerily quiet. Anna turns against my chest and reaches up to stroke my face. I close my eyes and feel her kind touch. I soak in her love.
Kaiden, if anything happens to me,
I jerk and my eyes snap open, catching hers. Don't you dare finish that sentence. Nothing is going to happen to you. The pit of dread opens up inside me. I don't want to talk about this, but she is persistent and unnervingly gentle.
If we both, you know, end up down there in hell, we can make it through together. We'll keep each other strong until it's our time for judgment.
I've never heard anyone talk about hell in this way, as if it's something that can be faced and endured. I swallow hard at Anna's vision. To think that even in complete darkness and despair, our souls can cling to each other and still feel this love. I want this dream of hers to be true. I want to cling to this one. I'll never leave your side, I tell her. I swear it. I hold her tight until she falls asleep. And at some point, I let myself drift away as well. No more sex. I blink several times at Anna as we stand outside the car the next morning. Have we been married long enough for her to say that? Just until after the summit, she rushes on. The summit. The summit where we might die. And then we'll never have sex again anyway. What rubbish. I'm not ready for this conversation. I want to go back to last night.
Kaiden,
she takes my hands in hers and tries to explain, but I am numb.
You have to pretend not to like me. It sucks, but it's the smartest plan. If we're both going to survive this, which I really think we can and will, this is our best bet. You're better at hiding your feelings than I am, but at this point it doesn't matter if they think I have feelings for you. You can even say you made me fall for you to lure me in.
Your father trusts you to find me and get me to the summit on your own. That's huge. He has to think you're in his pocket until the very last minute. We'll have freedom to communicate with each other and warn the others. Do you really want to jeopardize one of the only things we have going for us?
I closed my eyes.
Why must she be such a reasonable, positive little pixie?
I squeeze her hands.
No, I don't,
I say. I'm sorry. I'll do whatever I have to do. Or not do. I'm about to ask for one last shag when Anna says firmly, from here on out, no kissing, no holding hands or touching until this is all over. No doing anything that could look suspicious. Her eyebrows go up and I reluctantly nod, then let her hand slide from mine. I am secretly not in agreement, though I understand her caution. When did Anna become the cautious one when it comes to being caught? This blows. I take care of father's death rubbish later in the morning. Funeral home, realtor, and lawyer. It's not hard to feign mourning, being as I've been sworn off sex. I sign loads of papers and nod, frowning as people pat my back and shake my hand and say they're sorry for my loss. If only that arsehole were truly dead. I take father's urn and all the paperwork and leave the lawyer's office grumpy as ever. The plan is to call father and tell him I've captured Anna, but every time I think about it, I want to be sick. Anna is ready. Her father is ready. The other Neff are at the ready. I'm the only one who's not bloody ready. But I tell myself I'll keep playing along until it gets to be too real. Then I'll call it off and take us into hiding. I'll force her. I'm bigger than her. It's after 1 PM when we get to my old house. Whisperers are still out searching for Anna, and I figure they won't bother looking there. I walk her down to my old room, and she glares at the bed like it's a murder scene, probably imagining how it's been worked. I should have taken her upstairs to use the shower, but the other bathrooms have been emptied. I clear my throat and give her a towel. She goes in the bathroom, and I turn on the stereo. I sit on the edge of the bed and lean my forehead against my hands as the music fills my ears. I hope it will drown out all my thoughts of what's to come. Anna doesn't take very long in the bathroom. When the water shuts off, I switch off my stereo and look at my dresser. A dark thrill snakes across my skin as I eye the second drawer. I have to make this capture of Anna look believable, don't I? I slide open the drawer and see the flash of silver in the corner, my high-grade handcuffs. I take them out and shut the door. I can hear Anna humming and I glance around for whisperers. How she can feel content enough to hum is beyond my understanding. Must be the angel blood. I sit back on the bed and turn the handcuffs over and over in my hands while Anna gets ready. She opens the door and I slowly lift my eyes to her. She's fresh and natural with her summery clothes and wet hair. She stares at the handcuffs with apprehension as I turn them over. That's good. I want her to be scared. It's not too late to run, I say. She stares a minute more, then whispers, yes, it is. She stays exactly where she is when I stand and move towards her. I watch her chest rise and fall a bit faster as I stand before her and slide the bag from her arm. I watch her face and she says nothing as I click the cuffs first around one wrist and then the other. Her breathing is quicker now and she's right to be frightened. She's mine and I will do what I want with her. That includes throwing her ass into a car and disappearing into the boonies of West Virginia. I hear it's quite nice there. I look down at her body and the severity of the metal holding her wrists together. The contrast is something beautiful. Damn. What? She whispers. You look amazing in handcuffs. And you're officially my prisoner. I'm blasted with the warm scent of pears and freesia, and I know that if I wanted to, I could make Anna take back that no-sex rule. We can't, she says, reading my mind, but her words are breathy and unconvincing. We most definitely can. And the low pain in my abdomen begs me to. She fumbles for words, trying not to look in my eyes. Remember, you told your father you don't like me. You're not supposed to want me. The Whisperers could find us any second. We can't lose our advantage. It's time to call him, Kai. Tell him you found me, and then we'll call the others to let them know it's starting. Wait, call him?
Now?
I shake my head. Not yet.
Yes, now.